quick studies, and we love you.
You're such a sweetheart, and I love you too. Aunt Barb's eyes filmed, but she blinked them clear. What's important is the truth, and what you said last night was the truth. That's why I'm grateful to you. The fact is that I don't know if after all of this I'll beat my cancer or if it will beat me. I don't know if I'm going to die, but I have to admit the possibility. Judy swallowed hard, trying not to cry. Her mother tisked. I don't know what the point of this is. This talk is negative and morose, morbid, melodramatic. Delia, it may be dramatic, but it's not melodramatic. I'm talking about life and death. There's drama in that, and I don't apologize for it. Judy shot her mother a pleading look. Let her talk, Mom. Like she said, if you don't want to talk, then don't talk, but don't silence her. This is about her, not you or me. It's such negative thinking, her mother shot back. She's about to go into an operation. She has to believe she's going to get better, or she won't get better. Mom, that's not true, Judy said, though she could see fear, not criticism, flashing through her mother's eyes. Aunt Barb turned to Judy's mother with a deep frown. No, it's not true. That's what I hate the most, that burden. We talk about that in our support group, too. How we put that burden on ourselves, or our family does. I put it on myself for so long. What burden do you mean? Judy asked gently. The burden that if I don't get better, it's my fault. Aunt Barb emitted a quiet huff of frustration. That if I just tried harder, or thought more positively, the chemo would have worked. That I practically caused my own cancer, which I didn't. My cancer wasn't caused by my bad attitude, my poor decisions, my eating too many processed foods, or my past sins. We know, Judy said, trying to soothe her, but her aunt seemed not to hear, glaring at Judy's mother. Delia, it's okay for me to tell the truth, and the truth didn't cause my cancer. My cancer was caused by bad luck. And no, I don't carry some horrible mutation in my cells, like the BRCA mutations. You know, Delia, we don't even have a family history of cancer. Aunt Barb kept her gaze glued to Judy's mother. I am trying my damnedest to save my own life. I don't know if I'll succeed, but if I don't, it won't be because I don't want to. Trust me, I want to, and I'm trying to. Mrs. Moyer, excuse me, said a man's voice from behind them, and Judy turned around to see a youngish African-American doctor with gold-rimmed glasses and a kind smile. Good morning, I'm your surgeon, Jim Winston.
Oh, hello,
Aunt Barb said, recovering enough to manage a polite smile, and Judy stood up to let the doctor through. Aunt Barb introduced Judy and her mother, and the surgeon explained the procedure, answered everybody's questions, and had Aunt Barb sign several informed consent forms, which was when a nurse came in to start a sedative, Versed, administered through the IV bag. In time, her aunt began to doze, but Judy couldn't bring herself to say goodbye.
Judy, her mother said quietly, you should be on your way now. She's resting comfortably.
Right. Judy rose and kissed her on the cheek, touching her shoulder, fleetingly reassured by the warmth of her aunt's skin through the thin gown. Aunt Barb, I'm going to go now. I love you.
Love you too, her aunt said drowsily.
Her eyelids fluttered, and she smiled.
See you later.
See you later,
Judy said too, because goodbye sounded too final. Tears came to her eyes, and she was glad that her aunt didn't see. She picked up her handbag and messenger bag, then gave her mother a quick wave. Call me as soon as you know anything, okay, Mom?
Sure.
Don't worry. Her mother flashed her a brittle smile, and Judy turned away and walked the gleaming corridor to the elevator. She got off the elevator on the lobby floor, and the stainless steel doors rattled open onto a crowd of hospital staff, doctors, nurses, and visiting family. She was just about to step off when her cell phone started ringing. "Excuse me." Judy wedged her way through the crowd, digging in her purse for her phone. She worried it was the nurse or doctor upstairs or even opposing counsel calling about the deposition. "Hello? Judy. It's Father Keegan. Do you remember me from Madre de Dios Church in Kennett Square?" "Of course, Father," Judy answered, relieved. "How are you?" "Fine. But my question is, how are you? I read on the local patch online that you were assaulted at your aunt's house last night. Is that true?" "Yes, thanks, but it wasn't serious. Thank you for asking." Judy switched mental gears, crossing the lobby and leaving the hospital for the bustling street. People hurried this way and that, heading to work, and 7th Street was clogged with traffic. Pewter clouds covered the sky, and the air was chilly. "Do the police have any suspects?" "No, not that I've heard of yet." Judy looked around for a cab, wondering how much to fill him in on about Iris. "They think that it was prowlers in the area, but I'm not so sure." "Why not?" "We made an unfortunate discovery, that Iris seems to have been hiding a large amount of cash in my aunt's house." Judy went to the curb to hail a cab, but there was none in the rush hour stream of cars and buses. "Really?" Father Keegan said, his tone hushed. "I find that hard to believe." "It's true. I saw with my own eyes." Judy had to get going if she wanted to prepare for the deposition. "I don't like to speak ill of the dead, but I'm afraid that Iris might not be as innocent as we all thought she was." "She is. I know her." "We're talking about $50,000 in cash, Father." Father Keegan gasped. "Something's wrong. I've known Iris for as long as she's been in the country." "I hear you. I had a better impression of her, too. So did my aunt. She's heartsick over this, betrayed by a dear friend, and it comes at a difficult time for her." "I am sorry, but you must be mistaken. Judy, something is very wrong with this situation. There's another reason I called you this morning." Father Keegan's tone turned grave. "It was to let you know that last night, someone broke into Iris's apartment at Point Breeze." "Oh, no," Judy said, surprised. "Was anybody hurt? What about her roommates?" "No one was home." "Thank God. What time did this happen?" Judy spotted a yellow cab in the distance and hustled toward it, waving. "Maria Elena came home around 8 o'clock, and the place was a mess. The lock had been broken on the exterior door, and the interior door was broken too. So that must have been directly before they went to my aunt's place." Judy's thoughts raced. The cab flashed its headlights at her. "They tried Iris's apartment first, then my aunt's. Was anything taken?" "Some of the girl's jewelry, but it wasn't valuable. Iris's bedroom and the entire apartment had been ransacked. They were looking for something. The money." Judy reached the cab, her thoughts racing. "So this confirms what I suspected, that no matter what the police say, the prowlers at my aunt's house were not random. Iris was involved with some very bad actors who must have known she was hiding money. Now that she's gone, they're trying to find the cash." "That can't be what's going on." "It is." Judy climbed into the cab and closed the door behind her. She reached into her wallet, slid out a business card, and handed it to the older cabbie so she wouldn't have to interrupt Father Keegan. "What did the police say?" "They don't know, of course. Maria Elena didn't report it." Judy realized belatedly that her question was naive. "How did you find out about it, then?" "Through the grapevine. Then I confirmed it with Maria Elena, whom I think you met." "Were there any witnesses? Did anybody see anything?" "If they did, nobody's telling, Maria Elena. This is not a community that snitches. They're afraid of retaliation, It's like the inner city, even though it doesn't look like the inner city. Father, you should tell Maria Elena and the other roommate to get out of that apartment. Whoever Iris was in cahoots with hasn't found the money yet. They might come back or even hurt those girls. That isn't possible, Father Keegan said, incredulous. Iris would never break any law. She wasn't in cahoots with anyone. What do you believe she was involved in, exactly? I have no idea. I'm guessing it was some sort of drug dealing. If not hard drugs like heroin, then prescription pills, or maybe just trafficking in pills that you could buy cheaper in Mexico and bringing them into the United States. How often did she go back home? Never, Father Keegan shot back, firming his tone. She never missed Mass, and she was always working at the mission. Your theory is simply wrong. You don't have any proof, do you? No, but I have $50,000 in cash I can't explain, and she endangered my aunt and my mother. Judy could hear in the priest's voice that he simply didn't believe her, but she understood that. It was his nature and calling to believe the best in people. He had faith. Where is the money now? It's in a safe at my office, and I have to get to an estates lawyer to put it in a bank for Iris's estate. Judy had already emailed her friend, and she'd get to his office after her deposition. She held on to the greasy leather strap as the cab braked in stop-and-go traffic. Even if you don't believe me, I think you should pass the word to Iris's roommates. You think they're in physical danger? Absolutely. Judy reflexively touched the goose egg, which had looked redder than yesterday in the bathroom mirror this morning, like she majorly needed proactive. Judy, you have it all wrong. You're judging Iris without knowing her. I don't think so, Father. I got my aunt out of her house until we can figure out what's going on. Judy glanced over her shoulder as the cab turned left onto Pine Street. She wondered if her aunt was being wheeled into the operating room right now, if the plastic mask was being put over her face, or if she was under the knife this very minute. Tears came to Judy's eyes, but she blinked them away. Judy, are you there? Hello? Father, Judy said, speaking from her heart. May I ask you to pray for someone? Chapter 23. Judy hit the office running, her head buzzing with Aunt Barb, Iris, the deposition she had to get ready for, and the 50 grand she had to get rid of. She had almost forgotten about the damages cases, but the cardboard boxes dominated the reception area. She hurried past them to the desk, where their receptionist, Marshall Trow, was talking with Allegra. Hi, Judy, Marshall said with an easy smile. She was in her early 30s and had a wholesome natural prettiness, with bright blue eyes and light brown hair pulled back into a long braid. What happened to your forehead? Allegra's eyes widened behind her big glasses. You look like a cyclops. How did you hurt yourself? It's a long story, ladies, but I don't have time to tell it. Judy looked at Allegra. Why aren't you in school? It's a teacher's in-service day, so I thought I'd come in. Benny said you could use me on some new cases. Did she? Judy held her tongue, and Marshall handed her a pink stack of phone messages. You got a bunch of calls on Friday, and about those boxes, Marshall gestured at them. Benny asked me to get them out of here. She didn't want them cluttering up reception for the start of business. The building guys are on the way to move them. Where should we put them? There's so many, I'll need two conference rooms. Let's put the bulk of them in B, since it's bigger, and put any leftover in A. A is free, right? I have to take a deposition. Judy checked the modern glass clock on Marshall's desk. The dep starts at 9 o'clock. It's free. I'll try to get the boxes put away before then. Great. Start with A so we don't get interrupted, okay? Where's Mary? A pretrial conference. She should be in an hour, she said. Thanks. Allegra, come with me? Judy took off with the intern down the hall. She wasn't as close to Allegra as Mary was, but she wasn't as close to anybody as Mary was. Let me get you started, then I have to get ready for my dep. Okay. Allegra trotted obediently beside her, a slip of a girl, with light footfalls, especially in her moccasins. Her long brown hair swung behind her, wavy and unstyled, and she was wearing black tights and a yellow wool sweater dress, which Judy suspected was as close as she could get to dressing like a bee, since the girl was a bee fanatic. Here's what I want you to do. Judy slid her laptop from her messenger bag as she reached her open door, went to her messy desk, cleared a spot, opened the lid, and fired up the laptop. I got an email last night from one of the paralegals at Leighton and Reese in New York, and I'm going to forward it to you. Okay. Here we go. Judy plunked down in her desk chair, scrolled to find the email, and sent it to Allegra. She couldn't stop thinking of her Aunt Barb, who must be on the operating table right now. Father Keegan had promised he'd pray for her, and if her aunt survived her dreaded illness, Judy would rethink her position on the deity. Judy, you were saying? I just sent you an email that lists all 75 new matters. Wow, 75? Allegra's pale blue eyes lit up behind her glasses, and Judy wished she could share the intern's enthusiasm. Print the email, open the boxes, and use it as a checklist. Judy checked her laptop screen, momentarily distracted by the sight of her other email piling onto her monitor screen by the dozen, making a hill she could never climb. She flashed on Benny's telling her last night that she didn't have a client base. It was true, but today it seemed beside the point, because she sure had tons of work. Then what? Then, Judy looked up from her laptop to see that Allegra wasn't taking any notes. How are you going to remember this? I'll remember. Judy let it go. Allegra was allegedly a girl genius, but it was still a little hard to believe. Make sure we have each of the files. Then what do you want me to do? Once I see if all the files are there? We'll have to organize them. Judy slid her phone from her purse and placed it on the desk so she wouldn't miss a call from her mother at the hospital. How? Alphabetically by plaintiff? By date of complaint? By trial date? I'm not sure yet. Judy's brain was too busy to deal with Allegra's excellent questions and or youthful enthusiasm right now. I've never run litigation this extensive. You'll probably be in college by the time we're finished trying those cases. I'm already in college. What? I take college courses at Penn State's branch campus. Allegra grinned. Anyway, can I come to the deposition? Benny said it would be good if I did. That's why I dressed up. All right, Judy said, though she was getting tired of Benny running her practice. Yay! What do I do? Just sit quietly and take notes. Or act like you're taking notes. Be unobtrusive. If they object to your being there, I'll have to ask you to leave. Only parties and counsel are permitted at depositions, but I'm going to pass you off as a paralegal. I can act like a paralegal. Hardworking and underpaid. Same as an intern. Judy smiled for the first time that day. Have you ever been to a deposition before? Yes, with Mary. But she was defending it, not taking it. It's a very different purpose. Judy got up, went to her credenza, and pulled out the case file while she spoke. When you take a deposition, the purpose is to find out as much as you can from the witness, so you're prepared for anything he says on the stand at trial. This is going to be boring, I'm afraid. That's okay, I like to learn. Good. This is just a step in the process, the beginning of the exercise in delayed gratification. That's the life of the trial lawyer. Okay. What that means in practical terms is that I want the witness to relax at the deposition. I'm going to ask open-ended questions. I'm going to let him yap. I'm not going to cross-examine him like at a trial. No pyrotechnics, no law and order. Judy found the case file in the drawer, slid it out, and let the drawer roll closed. It'll be like watching someone lay bricks, one by one. I'm building a foundation for a case at trial. You understand?
Yes.
So if I act nice to him, don't be fooled. On the stand, I'm going to make him wish he'd never met me.
Whoa, Allegra said, her eyes glittering. It's dark, Judy.
Right. Judy did feel bile course through her system, but maybe because she had so much on her mind lately, like Aunt Barb, Iris, and her mother, and Frank, who'd left the apartment last night with barely a peck on the cheek. But not today. Today will be a snooze fest. His lawyer, who's good, will try to stop him from talking. They will have met before the deposition, and his lawyer will have told him not to volunteer, answer only the questions asked, and keep his answers to yes or no. This matters a lot in this case because it hinges entirely on a credibility question. What's the credibility question? This is a sex discrimination case, and our client is Linda Adler, a financial consultant at Penn Bank, who says she didn't get a promotion to branch manager because she's a woman. The reason she thinks that it was discrimination is that she heard that her boss said to the witness, there's no room for women at the top at Penn Bank.
That's terrible.
Allegra's slim hand flew to her mouth, and Judy noticed her fingernails were bitten down. It happens still. Judy closed the lid of her laptop to take it with her, like a security blanket for grown-ups. The witness today is Devi Govinda. He wasn't the one who made the statement. That's his boss, Guy Morell. But I'm saving Morell for the last deposition.
Why?
I want to get as much information as I can before I meet Morell, because he's the person who decided not to promote Linda. Judy slid her notes from the case file and skimmed them quickly while she spoke. The only fact we have against us is that some of the comments in Linda's employment reviews aren't stellar, so the company is claiming that's the reason they didn't promote her. She doesn't believe that that's the real reason, and I don't either, but under the law, I have to prove that it's a pretext.
Why don't you believe it was her performance?
Because Morell reviews her performance, and his view is tainted, and any employee review is subjective in itself. Judy glanced at her phone to make sure her mother wasn't calling from the hospital. Also, when I look at the personnel files of other women in the department, they tend to be reviewed more harshly than men would be in the same position.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. That's not easy to prove, but that's what makes it a lawsuit. Conflict, difference of opinion, dispute. Understand?
Yes.
Bottom line, I'm going to soften Govinda up and see if I can get him to wobble and give up a little of what Morell said. It's a long shot because it would cost him his job and he's not going to admit it. Unless he's drunk, which actually happened to me once. Judy looked over as the buzzer sounded on her desk phone, signaling a call from the reception desk, and she picked up.
Yes, Marshall?
Opposing counsel and the witness are getting off the elevator right now. The court reporter's already here. The boxes are in the conference room. What do you want me to do?
Please set us up with some coffee and send out for the good Danish so they feel the love. I'll come out and greet everybody.
On it. Thanks. Judy hung up, rising. She gathered up her file, laptop, and phone, checking the screen for the umpteenth time.
Let's roll, little one.
Exciting! Allegra popped to her feet.
Not hardly, Judy told her, but she was already skipping out the door.
Chapter 24. Judy tried to pick up the pace after the preliminaries, like name, address, and employment history, even though she already had some of the information from the personnel file. She was getting a feel for Devi Govinda, a somber Indian-American man in his mid-40s, with the stilted air and round, excessively vigilant eyes behind beaded gold-rimmed glasses. His glossy jet-black hair was neatly trimmed, albeit thinning, and he was slightly overweight, so that his neck spilled over the stiffness of the light blue collar, which he had on with a worn patterned tie and a nondescript dark suit.
Mr. Govinda, you work at the Narberth branch of Penn Bank, is that correct?
Judy continued, trying to find a rhythm to her questions. She'd started the way she usually did, with softballs, so she could get a lot of yeses in response and build a nice momentum. It wasn't working so far, because she couldn't keep her eyes from straying to her phone or her thoughts from Aunt Barb, lying on the operating table only 10 blocks away.
Yes?
And what do you do at the branch?
Do you mean what is my job?
Yes. Judy could see that Govinda had been well coached, and also that the cheese Danish wasn't working its carbohydrate magic. His lawyer, Richard Kellen, was equally silent. A short, squat lawyer from Prendergast Manning, a notoriously jerky firm. He had on a dark suit, an Hermes tie with little orange H's, and horn-rimmed glasses. His face was pudgy, and his gray-eyed gaze fixed outside the window, even though the view was only of the air conditioning ducts and fans atop the building next door.
I am a financial consultant at the branch.
Tell me what that means.
I'm not sure of your question. Govinda pursed fleshy lips. I don't understand.
Sorry, perhaps I could be more clear. Judy couldn't find her groove. What are your job duties as a financial consultant?
I sell various banking products to customers who are interested in instruments or potential investments over $100,000.
How long have you worked in the branch in that capacity?
5 years.
And Linda Adler, the plaintiff, was a financial sales consultant in the Narberth branch for the past 3 years, is that correct?
Yes.
Let's talk for a moment about the corporate structure at Penn Bank. Just so I'm clear, the Narberth branch is one of 15 branch banks in the Philadelphia area, is that correct?
Yes, though we call it the Philadelphia metro region.
Thank you. Judy made a mental note that Govinda was precise. She'd have to step up her game. The clock on the credenza said it was 9:25, so they were into her aunt's operation. And there are no other financial sales consultants in the branch, is that also correct?
Yes.
How many licensed financial sales consultants are in the Philadelphia metro region?
4 others, 5 total.
How many are women and how many are men?
4 men, 1 woman.
And what are their names? Judy looked over as Allegra glanced up from her legal pad, then returned to her note-taking. It reminded her of the days when she'd sit next to Mary and they'd write each other notes on their pads. She wondered if that would ever happen again, but the answer was staring her in the face from the far wall of the conference room, where some boxes from the damages trials had been stacked a cardboard wall of associatehood. Stan Barstall, Jerry Moore, and John Morales. Judy checked the notes in the file in front of her, but they were on a different subject.
Let me see. The regional manager who oversees 15 branches in the Philadelphia metro region is Mr. Guy Morrell, is that correct?
Yes. Where is his office?
Center City.
Judy's eyes strayed to her phone, wishing her mother could text at least. She didn't take notes so she could help Govinda forget it was a legal proceeding, but she was having a harder time than usual listening. Mr. Govinda, let's shift gears. As a financial sales consultant, what were Ms. Adler's job responsibilities? Kellen interrupted.
If you know.
Govinda nodded.
Linda was supposed to sell investment and traditional banking products to our customers, including checking accounts, savings accounts, credit cards, and loans.
Judy made a mental note that he used her client's first name. Are you aware that as a financial sales consultant, Ms. Adler had a quota of minimum monthly production goals to meet?
Yes.
Her monthly investment production goal was $1,000, and her minimum revenue requirements were 60,000 minimum revenue credits. Is that correct?
Yes.
And she received incentive pay as well, did she not, for meeting those quotas?
Yes.
Kellen sighed, still gazing out the window.
I'm not bothering to object, but is this line of questioning necessary, Judy? You can confirm it from her personnel file.
Judy knew it wasn't objectionable. I'm trying to understand
how much about Miss Adler's performance Mr. Govinda knows, and the only way to do that is to ask him. Judy turned to Govinda. To the best of your knowledge, did Ms. Adler meet those minimums every month of this year?
Yes.
How about the two previous years she's been employed by Penbank?
Yes.
To whom does Ms. Adler report?
To the regional manager, Mr. Morell.
To whom do you report?
I also report to Mr. Morell.
How is it that you have information regarding whether she meets her minimum revenue goals or not?
She told me, us, at lunch.
And was it part of Linda Adler's job to refer clients to you?
Yes. She wasn't licensed to sell investments over $100,000, and she referred those clients to me.
How many such clients has she referred to you this year to date?
16.
How many of those resulted in closed sales?
16.
And the year before that?
15.
How many of those resulted in closed sales?
14.
Judy skipped ahead, growing impatient and edgy. Mr. Govinda, does the fact that you were able to close the sales reflect on Ms. Adler in any way?
Yes, she cultivated high-quality targets.
Do you know how she did that?
Yes, through cold calls and a network in the community.
What was Ms. Adler's network to which you just referred?
She belongs to Curves and she's in a few book clubs. One of our customers came from her book club and another from church. They were high-net-worth individuals and I was able to close the sale with them.
Do the four other financial sales consultants in the Philadelphia metro region refer clients to you?
Yes.
Did any of them send you as many referrals as Ms. Adler did?
No.
Judy knew she should ask for the details to lay her brick foundation, but she couldn't fight her anger at him, at the injustice to Linda Adler, at Benny, at the hidden money, and even at breast cancer. Do you believe that Ms. Adler deserved the promotion to branch manager?
Objection! Kellen swiveled his neat head around with a new frown. It's irrelevant whether or not the witness believed Ms. Adler was entitled to the promotion.
Judy felt herself losing her temper.
No, it isn't. And we both know that relevance isn't a proper objection at deposition.
Mr. Govinda, you may answer the question.
Kellen snorted. Don't answer, Devi. I'm instructing you not to answer.
Judy reached into the middle of the table and snatched the telephone receiver from its cradle.
Rick, shall I call the judge right now and get a ruling?
You tell me.
Fine. That won't be necessary.
Kellen rolled his eyes.
Mr. Govinda, you may answer the question. I'll note for the record that this is Mr. Govinda's opinion only.
Judy faced Govinda, trying to get in control.
Mr. Govinda, did you think Ms. Adler deserved that promotion?
It's not for me to say, Govinda answered, his expression impassive.
It is now, Judy shot back, and Allegra looked over, her fair skin flushing.
Mr. Govinda, I'm asking you a question, and you are compelled to answer. In your opinion, didn't Ms. Adler deserve that promotion?
Again, I cannot say. I'm not her superior. I don't have the complete facts.
But you know that she referred you more customers than any of the other financial sales consultants, and that she made her quota for all 3 years.
Judy leaned forward, urgent.
What other facts do you need, Mr. Govinda?
Kellen shook his head.
Objection, arguing with the witness.
Govinda's head swiveled to Judy.
I would need to know more facts concerning the employee who received the promotion. He was a new hire for PNC and we didn't know him.
Judy threw up her hands. It's not a relative question. I'm not asking you to make a comparison. I'm asking you simply upon the facts you have. Did Ms. Adler deserve that promotion?
Kellen interjected. Objection calls for speculation.
Govinda blinked. I cannot speculate. Judy cut to the chase.
Mr. Govinda,
Isn't it true that Mr. Morell told you that there was no room for women at the top of Penn Bank?
No.
Judy wasn't about to stop. Mr. Govinda, I remind you that you're under oath here, and I'm going to ask you again. Isn't it true that Mr. Morell said that to you?
Kellen scowled. Objection asked and answered.
Rick, I'm allowed to press him. Mr. Govinda, answer the question.
No, that's not true.
Mr. Govinda answered, but he averted his eyes. Judy tried a lateral attack. Mr. Govinda, did Mr. Morell hire you?
Yes.
Does he have the power to fire you?
Yes.
Does Mr. Morell review your performance?
Yes.
Does he decide whether you receive raises or incentive pay?
Yes.
Have you received incentive pay?
Yes,
Govinda answered. Then he volunteered, every quarter since I've been at Penn Bank. How about raises?
Yes, same thing.
Mr. Govinda, when I get you on the stand at trial, there will be a judge and a jury. Are you going to lie to them? Because we both know that Mr. Morell said to you there was no room for women. Objection! This is harassment! No, this is litigation. And Mr. Govinda better get used to it. Judy faced Govinda, her emotions bubbling over. You're lying through your teeth. You won't get away with it. Not in court, and neither will Morell.
Judy, objection! This is argumentative, and
I want you to worry about it every night until trial. I want you to lose sleep over it. Judy felt her temper give way, which she'd never done in a deposition in her life. I want you to tell Mr. Morell you can't keep his secret, that you won't perjure yourself to cover his ass or to keep your job.
Improper! You have no right to speak to my client this way, and I am going to hammer you both until I find out the truth, and nobody is going to believe you after I get through with you. We're leaving.
Kellen jumped to his wingtips, yanking Govinda out of his seat by his jacket sleeve. This deposition is over, and anybody can see that you're protecting your boss, and they're going to know you're covering up the truth.
Judy jumped up as Govinda hustled to the door behind Kellen.
You better tell Morell, too. You're not going to get away with this. I'm coming for you.
Kellen and Govinda left the conference room. The door slammed closed behind them, and the air went abruptly still.
Wow! Judy!
Allegra shot up like a rocket, her cheeks flushed with excitement.
That wasn't boring at all!
The court reporter looked up, her hooded eyes confused, and fingers poised over the stenography machine.
Counsel? I'm not sure I understood that last exchange.
Me neither, Judy thought, but didn't say. She picked up her laptop, case files, and papers. She was trying to figure out what just happened, but Allegra was bouncing around the conference room like an overexcited puppy.
Judy, that was amazing!
Allegra's eyes went wide behind her glasses. I totally want to be a lawyer when I grow up. It's so exciting.
It's not always that exciting, Judy said, dismayed.
Aunt Barb's operation, Iris's death, the secret cash, the damages cases, it had all gotten to her. She checked her phone, but her mother still hadn't called. She clutched her stuff to her chest and went to the door, with Allegra bopping along behind her.
That was the coolest thing ever. You went right at them. They ran away.
But listen, that's not the best thing. Judy held the door for Allegra, only to see Benny standing in the hallway, holding a boxy trial bag and talking to Mary. Judy touched Allegra's arm.
Allegra, don't tell them about guys,
Allegra called out. And before Judy could finish her sentence, the intern was off and running.
Guess what Judy just did?
Chapter 25.
Guys, you're not going to believe what happened in our deposition.
Allegra raced off to meet Benny and Mary, who turned to her.
What?
Mary asked with an interested smile.
Judy scared that lawyer away, and the witness too. They were lying, and she called them out on it, and they bounced.
Allegra's words poured out in a rush, and as Judy came up from behind her, she could see Mary's smile freeze in place. Benny stiffened.
Carrier? They ended the deposition? She asked, checking her watch.
It's 10 o'clock. You weren't even in there an hour.
How could Benny? It was amazing, Allegra interrupted. It was dark, Judy. I so want to be a lawyer, I can't even wait.
Mary said, dark, Judy? Benny frowned.
Carrier, what happened?
Nothing, really, Judy answered, not wanting to justify herself to Benny. She could see that Mary was already worried for her.
Aren't you going to court?
Fill me in. We're starting late today and I have time. Benny set down her trial bag. This was in Adler, wasn't it? Whom did you depose today, Morell or Govinda?
Govinda.
Allegra chirped up.
Every question Judy asked the witness, he didn't want to answer, so she told him she was going to get him at trial.
Benny's eyes flared an incredulous blue.
Carrier, you told him what?
Allegra answered.
And she told him,
Allegra, Benny snapped, let Judy tell the story.
But she's too modest, Allegra insisted. She doesn't want to brag about herself. You know how she is.
Judy put a hand on Allegra's shoulder, moving her out of the crossfire. Benny, if you remember the details of the case, the statement was made that there's no room.
I remember the statement, so what happened? You asked him if Morell made the statement and he denied it.
Of course. Judy felt a renewed flicker of anger. So I pressed him, as I should.
You had to do more than press him for them to get up and walk out.
I pressed him hard, Judy bristled. I challenged him.
How much did you challenge him? Benny recoiled. You can't challenge him so much they walk out. You crossed the line.
No, I didn't. Judy knew she had crossed the line, but she shouldn't be called on the carpet for it on her own case. She couldn't bear to look at Mary. It was just like what had happened last night, only worse.
You had to have crossed the line. And it's a dumb thing to do with Rick Kellen. I've known him for 20 years, and he's one of the biggest jerks around. What did you do?
My job.
How do you figure that?
It's strategy, Judy thought on her feet.
Govinda is the weak link, and I want him to worry. Tell Morell that he won't lie for him, or at least that they won't get away with it, and that will provoke a settlement.
That's quite a gamble, Benny pursed her lips. You need to know what Govinda will say at trial, and you won't get a second bite at the apple. That was your shot.
I know what he'll say at trial. I intend to beat him before we get there.
He's wound too tight, and the anticipation of being embarrassed and humiliated will eat away at him, I can tell.
So you intimidated him?
I destabilized him.
Benny blinked. Dark Judy indeed.
Judy held her tongue. Even if we don't settle, he'll be a wreck on the stand. I won't have to break him down at trial. He'll break himself down before then.
Still, there's other things you could have explored.
I didn't need anything else from him. The case is the statement. I got what I needed for the case.
Benny, whatever the strategy is, it's my strategy.
But it's my case. Linda Adler is my client.
And you assigned the case to me as soon as the complaint came in.
I'm the billing partner.
But I interviewed her on intake, sent out interrogatories and document requests, and defended her deposition. I'm working the case.
If you're working the case, I don't expect a call from the client. She called me because you didn't return her call.
Judy felt herself redden. I told you, the call fell through the cracks this weekend, but I'm working the case like I always do.
You're not working it like you always do. Benny picked up the trial bag.
All of a sudden, you're not getting along with anyone.
Fighting in depositions, giving me pushback on Bendiflex, and now this?
It's not like you.
What's gotten into you?
Everything, Judy wanted to say. But what she answered was, I'm fine.
And what's up with the 50 grand?
please tell me you're getting it out of my safe.
It will be gone by the end of the day. Judy would have to deal with it before she went to the hospital.
Good. Talk to Marshall when you're ready to remove it. She has the combination. I have to go. Take care.
Good luck, Judy said, catching Mary's eye. Then she noticed Allegra's lower lip puckering.
Judy, Allegra said, I didn't mean to get you in trouble.
You didn't. Judy patted her shoulder. Don't worry, cheer up. You didn't do anything wrong. I'm a big girl.
I never saw Benny get that mad.
You haven't been here that long, Judy said, forcing a chuckle.
Judy, Mary said, frowning, can I talk with you a minute, alone?
She smiled at Allegra.
It's not personal, but you can't be there when I slap her around.
Okay, Allegra said with a shaky smile. But Judy was already in motion, heading for her office, plopping her files and laptop down on the desk, with Mary following her inside and closing the door behind them.
So, are you okay? She asked when they were alone. I'm just so... ugh.
Judy set her phone face up on her desk where she could see if a call was coming in.
Meanwhile, what is my mother's problem? I've texted twice. She can't return a text. Come on. Why don't you tell Benny about your aunt?
It's not her business. Judy started pacing, too agitated to sit down. Unfortunately, she had a small office, so there wasn't far to walk. Plus, the floor was a mess, which only bothered her more.
Benny asked you directly, and it explains what's bugging you.
No, it doesn't. What's bugging me? Judy stopped pacing to try to figure out how to finish this sentence, but threw her hands up.
It doesn't matter. Yes, it does. I don't agree with her. How about that?
Okay, Mary said slowly. She cocked her head the way she always did when she listened carefully, and she folded her arms in a dark charcoal pantsuit. And the fact that my aunt has cancer doesn't have anything to do with my not agreeing with Benny. Judy couldn't tell if she was thinking clearly or emotionally or both.
So tell her anyway. What's the harm? She'll understand. She's another woman.
I don't want to be cut slack because my aunt is ill.
Why not? Everybody needs a break sometime.
I don't need a break. That's not the problem. Judy stopped pacing, caught up short with the realization.
The problem is that I'm starting to be really unhappy here because the lines of authority are not clear.
What are you talking about? Mary asked, her expression bewildered.
I didn't know you were unhappy.
I didn't know it either. Not until recently. Judy shrugged, pained. She was thinking aloud, which she had done with Mary for as long as they'd known each other. I recognize that I'm only an associate. But don't I have any autonomy at all?
Of course you do.
No, I don't. I'm not allowed to decide which cases I take. I'm not even allowed to make the decisions in cases I'm assigned to. Am I even a lawyer?
Oh, honey, Mary moaned. She didn't mean it that way.
Yes, she did. Since when is that the way we work? Take it and shut up. The more Judy thought about it, the more right she felt, which was something that happened to her often.
What about female empowerment and all that? Or does it only apply when men are bossing us around, not women?
Suddenly, Judy's phone rang on her desk, and she leapt for it, her heart beginning to hammer. The iPhone screen showed it was Rick Kellen calling.
Oh, crap. I should take this. It's Rick.
Give me a minute. Go ahead and make nice. Judy picked up the call.
Rick, hi.
Judy, Rick said in a huff. What the hell was that about?
Come on, Rick. Since when did you turn into such a baby? You think I'm going to sit there while you harass my witness?
Oh, will you stop using that word? There's no jury around. The case turns on credibility, and I'm entitled to press him.
How long have you been practicing law? You've never had a rough deposition? You've never thrown an elbow? You tore into the guy.
The hell I did.
Judy raised her voice, though Mary was flashing her the peace sign. I'm calling because I expected you to apologize.
Don't hold your breath.
I'm warning you. I'm not going to let you treat Morell that way tomorrow. I'm not. He's a liar, and I do what I have to do.
Judy heard a click on the phone, which told her that another call was coming through. She checked the screen, and it was her mother calling from the hospital. She couldn't let it go to voicemail.
Rick, hold on. I have to take this call. We're in the middle of a conversation.
It's that emergency you couldn't let me postpone for. I'm sorry. Please hold. I'll be right back.
Judy pressed the screen to hold his call, then picked up on her mother.
Mom, how is she?
Judy, this is your mother.
Judy felt like her head was going to explode.
Yes, I know. I can tell from the phone screen. How's Aunt Barb?
The nurse just came out to say she's still in surgery, but that everything is going well.
Thank God.
Judy exhaled with relief.
Okay, Mom, let me call you right back. I'm on the other line.
The nurse said it's going to take longer, but not to worry.
Why longer?
Judy was about to swap calls, but stopped herself.
I don't know, dear.
Does it mean something went wrong?
Judy felt a tremor of fear for her aunt.
She told me not to worry.
Did you ask what she meant?
Judy asked, her tone sharper than she intended.
Don't be so critical.
I wasn't being critical. I just asked a question.
It's your tone, dear. Your tone is very critical.
Mom, really?
What, Mom, really?
Her mother imitated her, which was something Judy hated, but she let it go. She glanced at the phone screen, but Rick had hung up.
I'm sorry. I am trying to get as much information as I possibly can, because if the surgery takes longer, please stop. You're giving me a headache.
This has been such a difficult morning. I've been updating your aunt's friends. Colleen keeps calling. They mean well, but it's a chore.
Her mother sighed. Between you and your aunt? I'm caught in the middle, pulled in both directions.
No, you're not, Mom.
Judy exchanged a look with Mary, who got the message, and let herself out of the office, which showed excellent judgment.
Look, I'm going to leave for the hospital. My deposition is over, so I'm going to pack some work. And why? There's no reason for you to come yet. She's still in surgery.
I want to be there. I can work from there.
Why go to the trouble?
It's no trouble. And I can be there when she gets out of surgery.
Judy tried not to notice that her mother didn't say they could keep each other company.
By the way, your aunt keeps talking about Iris. She even started crying about her right before she left for the operating room.
That's understandable, isn't it? They were friends.
Judy remembered it was a touchy subject, so she dialed it back.
And any loss is traumatic, especially coming after Uncle Steve.
Anyway, she wanted me to remind you to find out about the autopsy. She said the results were supposed to be in today.
Okay, I'll follow up.
Judy realized that her mother wasn't up to speed on Iris news.
Also, I found out that Iris's apartment was broken into last night and searched.
Her roommates weren't home, so nobody was hurt. But this confirms that the guy who hit me last night wasn't random.
You keep saying that, dear, but I'm not sure you're right. There's a lot of crime in their neighborhoods.
Judy shuddered. Mom, that sounds racist.
No, it's not. It's the truth. You told me that yourself. The police said robbery is rampant with the illegals.
Judy let that go, too. She didn't want to get into a political discussion.
Mom, I should hang up, okay? I'll make a call about the autopsy and pack up.
Judy, there's one last thing. I don't think we should tell your aunt about this robbery business.
You mean the fact that Iris's apartment was broken into?
Yes. I don't think there's any reason for her to know that right now.
Why not?
She has much too much going on.
I'd like her to focus on herself. Why stress her more?
Judy hesitated.
I don't like keeping things from her. It's for her own good. I want her to take her mind off these morbid subjects, take care of herself, and get well. Trust me on this.
Okay, Judy said, hearing the finality in her mother's tone. We can tell her another time.
That's right. When she's feeling better, timing is everything.
See you soon.
Fine. And text me if there's anything, Judy said, but her mother had already hung up.
Chapter 26. Judy hustled around her office, grabbing case files and packing her messenger bag, worried about her aunt. She wanted to get to the hospital right away, though she'd have to stop to drop off the 50 grand with the estate lawyer. Meanwhile, she was also on her cell phone, her white ear wire jumping around as she moved, waiting for the call to Rick Kellen to connect.
"Richard Kellen's office," said a female voice, picking up.
"Hi, is he in?"
Judy asked, then introduced herself because she didn't recognize the voice as Terry's, Kellen's secretary.
"No, he's out for the rest of the day. I can tell him you called."
"May I have his cell number?"
Judy stuffed the Adler file into her messenger bag. She wanted to get on a better footing with Kellen before Morell's deposition, but she'd be damned if she'd apologize. On the contrary, the way he'd overreacted made her think that she was on the right track. She knew that Govinda would tell Morell and that both men would have a few sleepless nights, which was the desired effect.
"I'm not permitted to give out his cell number, sorry."
"He knows me. I'm opposing counsel at Rosato and D'Annunzio." Judy wedged her laptop into the messenger bag next to the Adler file.
"I'm sorry, I'm just not permitted to do that."
"Is Terry in? She knows me?"
"She's on vacation this week."
"Okay, could you just tell him I called and he can return my call at my cell number?"
Judy gave the secretary her number while she hoisted her messenger bag on her shoulder, then went into her desk and grabbed her purse.
"Will do, thank you."
"Thanks." Judy hung up, went online, and Googled the Chester County coroner as she left her office. She pressed in the phone number and hurried down the hallway while the call connected, wondering if she could ever do just one thing at a time.
"Coroner's Office of Chester County, may I help you? This is the assistant coroner."
"Yes, thanks. I'm Judy Carrier, and I'm calling about the autopsy of Iris Suarez. I think the results were supposed to be in today."
"Are you next of kin?"
"No, there's no next of kin in the country. I'm calling for my aunt, who will be taking care of the burial."
Judy caught sight of Allegra in the library opening cardboard boxes of the damages cases, and she took a quick turn to check in with her. Allegra looked up expectantly, and Judy flashed her the one-minute signal. The assistant coroner continued,
"In that case, there'll be a fee for the report. Let me check if it's available. Please stay on the line."
"Thank you." Judy put the phone on mute and peeked in the cardboard box, which groaned with thick red accordions. She said to Allegra, "Are you checking to make sure we have the right files?"
"Yes," Allegra nodded, holding the list of case captions that Judy had emailed her.
"Good. Set them up for new matter reports, too."
"I will, but there are so many boxes, like 300.
"Why so many?"
"The medical files take up so much room. Some were scanned onto discs, but some of the cases are so old, it's mostly hard copy."
"Good job." Judy gave her a quick pat on the back, then turned to go. "Call me if you have any questions. I'll be at the hospital."
"I hope everything's okay," Allegra called after her.
"Hello, Miss Carrier," said the assistant coroner, returning. "I'm sorry, but that report has not been completed."
"Has the autopsy been performed?"
Judy headed for the reception area, where Marshall stood beside her desk with the duffel bag of cash. There were two clients in the waiting room, and Marshall handed the bag over discreetly. Then they nodded goodbye to each other. The assistant coroner was saying,
Yes, the autopsy has been performed, but the report will not be complete until the close of business today. You'll have to call back then.
Okay, I will. By the way, is there a toxicology report?
Judy hit the down button for the elevator, hoisting the heavy bag to her shoulder. Yes, there is an initial toxicology report, and it screens for the presence of illegal drugs.
What about legal drugs? Does it test for that too?
Judy wondered if Iris was abusing prescription medication, even counterfeit prescription medication. No, further testing would be required to determine the presence of legal drugs, but there is a fee for that, and we don't do it unless the coroner determines that it would be necessary. The elevator arrived. The stainless steel doors rattled open, and Judy stepped inside the cab.
Where is the body now?
In the hospital morgue. We should be releasing it tomorrow, so you may want to contact your funeral director. He will call us to coordinate the release on your behalf, rather on your aunt's behalf.
Thank you. I'll call later for the report.
Goodbye now.
Bye.
Judy got off the elevator cab on the bottom floor and hurried through the crowded lobby with the duffel, trying not to be nervous that she was carrying so much cash. She acted normal, checking her email on the fly like everybody else. She scrolled through the first 10 incoming and ascertained nothing needed immediate attention as she hurried through the exit doors, hit the pavement, strode to the curb, and spotted a yellow cab almost instantly.
Yo!
She called, flagging it down. She jogged to meet the cab at the curb, jumped inside, and closed the door behind her. The cabbie was a young African-American man, and he turned to her.
Looks like you're in a hurry, he said with a friendly smile.
I am. Can you take me to 15th and Locust? Then I'm going to run inside and ask you to wait.
Sure, no problem.
The cabbie hit the gas, and Judy faced the window of the cab as they took off. The traffic wasn't bad, and the city whizzed past her, but she didn't see anything. She was worried sick about Aunt Barb. They reached the office quickly, and Judy flew out of the cab door into the mirrored building, up the shiny elevator, and finally into the old-school reception room of Eastwood and Respondi, where her classmate worked. He was one of the smartest kids on Law Review with her, but she hadn't seen him in ages. She hurried to the desk with the duffel bag where a dark-haired receptionist smiled up at her.
Hello, how may I help you?
I am Judy Carrier, here to see John Foxman. He's expecting me.
Please have a seat, the receptionist said, picking up the receiver of the desk phone.
But I'm in a hurry.
Judy?
Said a voice that Judy recognized, and she looked over. It sounded like John, but it didn't look like John. She remembered him as super tall and super skinny, with thick glasses and an insanely studious manner. But he had changed, to say the least.
John?
Judy asked, trying to keep the shock from her voice. And if John noticed that she was drooling, he didn't let it show. Either he had been working out or he was on steroids, but he looked tall and cut, filling out a sharply tailored dark suit with style. His formerly frizzy red hair had been tamed into short layers, and his blue eyes sparkled with amusement, which she guessed came with his new contact lenses.
Judy, if you're in a hurry, come with me. We'll get this done quickly.
John crossed the carpet to meet her and reached for the duffel.
Let me take the bag.
Thanks. Judy handed it over and fell into step beside him, though his strides were big as they hustled down the hall.
Nice of you to see me on such short notice.
I wanted to. You look great.
You too.
I remember the way you used to dress, John smiled. So fun.
I still dress fun, if not funny. I had a dep.
You don't go to the reunions?
No.
You should. You're missed.
Oh, thanks, Judy said, surprised at his warmth.
They had been fellow comment editors, working together plenty of late nights, but hadn't dated. She couldn't even remember if he had a girlfriend in law school, just that he was one of the scruffy guys in hoodies that hung out in the Law Review office.
It's been a long time.
Too long.
Well, we grew up.
It can't be avoided, can it? John grinned crookedly.
gesturing her into his office with a long arm.
Thanks.
Judy glanced around. His office was small but immaculate, with files organized on the credenza, labeled loose-leaf binders on the shelves, and diplomas and certificates of admission on the walls. It was the decor of the geeky boy she remembered, but he had grown into a very different sort of man.
If you could just sign these forms, I'll put this money in the bank next door right away.
John set the duffel down and reached for some blank forms on his desk, which had a polished maplewood top that was clear except for a laptop.
It's not a pen bank, is it? I'm suing them.
No, it's not, but I'm glad to see you're still the firebrand I remember. John slid the forms to Judy, then handed her a black enamel pen from his breast pocket.
Here, use my show-off pen. My father gave it to me when I passed the bar, back when pens still mattered.
I will, thanks.
Judy accepted the pen and scribbled her name on the first form, noticing that John wasn't wearing a wedding ring and there was no masonry dust under his fingernail. Then she realized with a start that she hadn't thought of Frank today, until this very moment.